Have you ever wondered how to make sense out of your messy life or how to live in peace in the middle of a stressful world? My name is Jamie Norton, and I want to welcome you to the Making Peace and Beyond podcast. In almost 50 years as a counselor, I have seen a lot of life happen, and this podcast is going to cover all of it. So thanks for joining us while we explore life's struggles and how to live in the peace, joy, and freedom that Christ died to give us. Today, I'm here again with my co-worker and friend, Mark Valley. And Mark, I'm glad to have you here.
Jamie, I'm excited to be back. Thanks for having me again.
It's always a privilege and an honor to spend time with you and just to talk with you. And today, we were going to just talk about how hard it is to change. So often, we hear in our counseling, I went to counseling, but it didn't work. And we say, you know, well, it didn't work because counseling doesn't work. It only works if you work it. So today we were just going to look at what is it that keeps people from changing? Why don't we just grow? Why don't we just look at the things that aren't working and do something different? So what do you think?
So maybe it's your experience too, but, you know, we often get folks who come into counseling, maybe come in for a couple sessions, and then you hear maybe through the grapevine that, oh, I tried counseling, it didn't work. You know, we went in for marriage counseling, or I did my individual thing, and yeah, it just didn't work out. And so it's just like a statement people make at face value, but you kind of wonder what's going on behind that. And you've been doing this, you know, long enough to know it's not quite that simple, right?
Like, no, change is hard.
Change is hard, right? And in order, you know, counseling isn't a magic wand, right?
Oh, really?
Like, it's shocking. It's shocking. But yeah, so it's like if something's not working well, yeah, it might not be the best fit counselor, client-wise, but there's probably something else going on there too, right? And so I know you have a ton of experience with people maybe not fully submitting themselves to the entire process, kind of fully committing or giving themselves over to the work that needs to be done. But there are all sorts of things that can keep a person from really experiencing like the full healing that God wants for them, not like the partial, but the full healing. And so I'm sure you've got some experience and some stories.
And you do too. Mm. And I think you touched on something. God wants us to heal, but he can only heal us in truth.
That's right.
And truth is a very frightening thing. Sometimes it's a very difficult, scary thing.
Yes.
Often people have been living a life that has avoided painful truth their entire life. And very often that starts very early in life when you're really hiding someone else's truth. Then my parents being alcoholic, we were taught not to talk about that. Mm. And so that no talk rule where we're protecting someone else's story. You know, I'm so grateful today because my daughter does a lot of speaking in it. And she's a great speaker, I have to admit.
She is, yeah.
She is a fantastic speaker.
She's great.
But she'll talk about the craziness of our life. I'm in a recovery. I was into smoking weed. I was into drinking. And she'll say, you know, talk about the marijuana smoke coming out of the minivan. And people sometimes will say, doesn't that embarrass you? And I'm like, no, that's who we were. It's not who we are.
Mm-hmm.
We totally believe in the healing power of Christ. But we had to get into truth to do that. And I say, you know, I'm so pleased that my daughter is free enough to get on a stage and talk about her story without having to protect mine.
Mm.
Because that's a great gift. I didn't have that gift from my parents. You know, it was like many people don't get the help they need because they're afraid of someone else getting mad. They're afraid that if I break that family authorized truth, I'm going to get kicked out of my family. I'm not going to be able to go home anymore.
Right.
Or I'm going to get a divorce. If I tell my spouse that, then they'd never be able to handle that.
What's this going to cost me?
It's going to cost me. The truth is costly.
Yeah.
I mean, Jesus showed us that. He didn't fare too well. I mean, you know, we killed him because he brought truth in the world. But healing can only happen in truth. And that's the double bind that I think people get into is, you know, the truth is really scary, it's really painful, but it's also the source of healing.
Yeah.
And God cannot enter into our lives. He cannot enter into the things that we avoid. And so that's probably one of the biggest reasons that people don't get what they need.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so what do you think?
Yeah.
What is one thing that you see?
Yeah, I mean, that's such a great point. Certainly, like, maybe at times an unwillingness to confront reality, what's really there. I'm a lifelong Browns fan, and unfortunately, that's just when you're born in North, you know, you're from the land of the Pines, right? Well, if you're born in Northeast Ohio, you grow up, you're born and bred a Browns fan, and it's like in the water, there's no escaping it. Well, we are perpetually thinking that this year is going to be the year. This is, you know, and really, we all have a sickness, but none of us want to admit it, right? None of us want to look in the mirror and say, like, this thing is broken. It's probably always going to be broken. So we just don't want to face the reality.
Yeah, exactly.
So at the end of the year, when you're scorned and you're facing the consequences of another dysfunctional year, it's like, why am I feeling all this pain? Well, it's simply because at the beginning of the year, I don't look in the mirror and say, Mark, you know what's going to happen this year. You know this team is dysfunctional. You know it's not going to work out well. It's like you're playing, like, make-believe. And so you just whitewash over the negativity and then are shocked by the fact that it doesn't work out well in the end. So, you know, for clients that come in, for me in my own life, I know there's all sorts of reasons why it's hard to be honest about truth, right? Like, it can be costly in certain ways, right? You mentioned with marriage. It could also be, for some folks, it's just such a hard pill to swallow. Am I really this person?
Yes.
Like, if my spouse or my children are saying that I am, I don't listen, or that I'm toxic, or that I have this problem or that problem, or I'm drinking too much. Can I deal with, what if that was true? You know? Mm-hmm. And so a lot of folks just don't want to even have to wrestle with that. Like, what if I am the person everybody is saying, like, hey, this is who you are. And I think some people are just, it's not that they can't face it. I think that there's a genuine unwillingness to face that until either the Lord works in them, they hit rock bottom, or the cost of staying the same is greater than the cost of change.
Yeah, I think shame is such a great isolator. Mm-hmm. I mean, shame is that feeling of inadequacy and helplessness, because if that is who I am, I don't know how to be somebody different. Maybe I can't be somebody different. Yeah. So I'd rather continue to do something wrong than to experience my helplessness to change. And I think that is a big thing for a lot of people. And we'll come in here and expect a magical cure, like the Browns are going to win the... Well, I won't say that. But we believe in magical change. If I just keep on going, something's going to be different. But what we find is that if we do the same thing we've always done, we simply get the same thing we've always got, and nothing changes. But we don't know what else to do.
Yeah.
If I've been speaking the language of survival all my life, control, fight, run, freeze, then it's scary. I mean, listen to the word survival.
Yeah.
You know, for goodness sake, I did these behaviors. I started talking like this, acting like this, in order to live, in order to be accepted,
mm-hmm.
in order to feel safe.
Yeah.
And you want me to change those behaviors?
Yeah, so if I give up this behavior, in effect, I'm giving up safety. Or I'm giving up acceptance, right? So to feel, even though that might not be the objective truth, that's our felt reality. And so that's the risk, right? Like, am I willing to face this truth? Am I willing to give up acceptance? Am I willing to give up feeling loved, feel whatever that is, whatever I've been guarding, in order to face the truth so that I can get a healing?
Could somebody love me if that's who I am?
Mm.
Could you really be with me if you really knew me?
Yeah.
I mean, people want to be loved, but they're terrified to be known. And so we're willing to put on what we think would make people love us,
right,
in order to feel loved. But then when somebody says, I love you, you think, well, if you knew that about me, you wouldn't.
Right.
You know?
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And yet, as believers, we know, like, we're all kind of a mess, you know?
Yeah.
Like, there's not one of us who's like, morally impressive before, you know, a perfect God. So, I mean, theologically, we might all agree with that, but maybe in practicality, no, it's like, I don't want to show my hand.
And I think our truth makes such sense to us. I mean, if I've been writing this story for a long time and I've been living into this narrative, I mean, we're all born into somebody's story.
That's right.
We adopt a part of that story, we keep on. And if I've been living into that story all of these years, and then it's not working, it's not getting me what I thought it would. You know, and I think sometimes the worst thing that can happen is that you get what you thought would make you happy and you find out it doesn't. And that happens in marriage a lot. Mm-hmm. If somebody just loved me, then I would be different. I would feel different. And so you marry somebody, so regular human being, and you still feel the way you always did, and it must be their fault. So, which brings us to another thing that's very typical is that blame, shame, shift. You know,
oh yeah,
or you just don't understand, or if you understood, then you'd agree.
Right.
You know, I mean, and I understand what you're saying, but I just don't agree with you.
Right.
you can do both, right?
You
know, it makes perfect sense, but I don't agree with you. You know, and but it's that idea that if people would just understand and do it my way, then everything would work out. And since it's not working out, it must be your fault.
Right. Right. Yeah, there's just like at times just an unwillingness. If it's not, if you're not playing by my rules, I'm out. And yeah, the blame shame shift. I like it just rolls off your tongue. It's like you've been seeing it for 4 years in people, Jamie. And granted, we all do it. We've all have done it. I've got 3 little ones at home, and so you better believe
they learn it early.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. It's like that scene from a Western where there's like 3 outlaws pointing guns at each other, and like they're all blaming the other one, right? So it's again, it's a very protective, instinctual piece in us that we just, it's so much easier just to say, well, you don't get it. You don't get my pain. And there may be some level of like, yeah, like I'm never going to fully understand somebody's entire experience. That's just human nature, right? Like, but that doesn't mean that it justifies your current behavior. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not carte blanche to just act however you want and I have to go along with it because I don't understand your full experience. And so, there's the shifting, the victim playing, the shifting, the redirecting of responsibility. Our culture is swimming in it right now, mm-hmm. right?
Like self-justification is huge.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
Probably, again, it's one of the bigger barriers to change is I can justify, I'm smart enough that I can justify anything I want to do.
Yes.
I can make anything I want to do sound right
yes.
to do at the time.
Yep.
You know, and if you have half a brain, you can do that.
Yeah.
And which is good because it's about what I got. But it's like we can, until we stop justifying ourselves mm-hmm. and start listening.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
and listening to somebody.
Yeah.
I mean, we want to be heard so badly we never hear anyone else.
Yeah.
You know, and probably one of the biggest struggles is I'm working with couples, you know, they're sitting there and one of them will say that, and you can see the other one waiting for the mouth to stop moving so they can give their pre-decided answer that they decided after the first word of the sentence because they're ready to contradict whatever you just said and to justify whatever you just blamed them for.
Yeah, it's a sparring match. It's not a dialogue, right?
No,
it's like two lawyers going at the courtroom.
Nobody's listening.
Yeah, nobody. You know, in something you said earlier about, you know, if you have half a brain, you can really be effective at justifying whatever, you know, and like I just, you know, I know this personally as a trained therapist, like in my not so shiny moments, I know the lingo, I can position myself in a way, if I'm hurt or if I'm experiencing some kind of conflict with my wife, like I can always, you know, play the one of the counselor cards I've learned along the way, and ultimately what it is, it's that I'm not in a place to listen. I don't want to listen. I want you to hear my pain, And I'm going to use whatever is at my disposal to do that. So it's guarded. I'm not open to dialogue in that moment. I'm not open to connect in that moment. I'm not open to hear. You said we don't hear each other. It's so true. And so how can I experience healing with that person if I am closed off? If I've got like a fortress built around me, there is no healing. There's self-preservation, but that's not going to coexist with actual healing, and especially healing in a relationship or relationships. Those two can't coexist.
No, if you're defending yourself, you're not going to change.
That's right.
I mean, if I feel attacked, which sometimes any contradiction, any challenge, any disagreement, any different opinion is seen as an attack.
Yeah.
Which it is not.
Right.
It's like it's so.
Yeah. But everybody knows that feeling, Jamie. Like
yeah.
We all like you could probably do that to me right here, right now, and I would feel the physiological feelings, like maybe my throat would get dry, maybe I would tense up. And I shift from the kind of like the frontal cortex of my brain, the rational, logical part where we can again dialogue out of. And I go back into the limbic part of my brain where I'm very reactionary and like, okay, I'm ready to like checkmate her now.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
We know that. I think everybody listening knows that feeling.
I call it the click. You know, it's like, watch for the click. Anger and fear click on. It's like, what'd you say?
Oh, it's so true.
Or,
that's so
that?
True. Yeah. And you can see it come on a person's face.
Right, right.
Yeah.
So you can feel the click. And when you click on, click out, because you're not going to be rational after
yes.
that. You're not going to listen to what's being said to you.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
You're in a defensive mode. You're in a survival mode.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you're fearing, you're anxious because you're feeling loss of control, and you're going to either start fighting or you're going to close down or you're going to freeze up. I mean, you're going to do those things. And so pay attention to yourself and pay attention to the body language of the other person.
Right.
You know, that's something that is interesting to me, is how little people notice when somebody is scared, when somebody is tearing up, when somebody is getting angry. And they just keep on going with whatever it is they're doing.
Yeah.
And the other person is now not hearing at all
right.
because they're in a survival mode.
Right.
And so it's it's just stop, you know, because our job really as counselors is to care about people and to give them a safe place that they can work out their issues with God and with each other, not with us. I mean,
right.
your issues aren't with me. I will eat the same thing for dinner no matter what you do. Yeah, but it is... to have a safe place to do that, and so to the degree that we can keep it safe,
yes,
you know, is what yeah. we want to look at.
Yeah.
We're not here to tell you what to do or to fix you. Mm-hmm. We're here to help you hear what God has to say to you
yeah.
and how to help yourself grow.
Yeah, yeah, and I think that's another great point about like a potential barrier to healing is the environment that you're working some of that stuff out. Is that safe, right?
Mm-hmm.
In a well-run recovery group, 12-step program, that's well-managed, in a good counseling setting, that's the idea, is that it's a safe space for you to bear some of that stuff and maybe hear some difficult feedback. But if the other person is safe, you're going to feel a little bit more at ease to lower down the wall and maybe to receive that hard truth. But I think if it's done in the middle of a kind of a competitive relationship, or you don't trust the other person, maybe for a good reason, maybe not, but that wall's not coming down and we're not going to be vulnerable. And so again, that's like one of the benefits of like a good counseling program or like a great recovery program, is that you've got that safe space to walk into wherever you like. We just, hey, I'm not perfect. You're not perfect. We all know this. That's why we're here. And so some people, I think it's just plugging into that, you know, finding those safe people that you can do that with.
Yeah, we're not going to be vulnerable in an unsafe environment.
Right.
And love and connection requires vulnerability.
That's right.
So it's when you've been, I think a lot of times when people come out with an unsafe history, you know, like you've been hurt by parents, you've been abused by a spouse, you've been bullied a lot by schoolmates or coworkers, or when you come out of a really unsafe environment, the idea of being vulnerable is terrifying.
That's right.
Because vulnerability means I'm helpless. I'm subject to whatever you're going to do to me because I'm open. And so to have a place where you can be, and I love watching, we were talking last night in a recovery group, because I'm in recovery, and we were talking about just how fun it is to watch each other grow. Mm. You know, how, yeah. how it started out, somebody said, I just saw you 2 years ago when you came in here, you're not that person, you know, you're, right. and just to be, have the privilege of walking with other people as they begin to take the chance of change. You know, it's, I think the risk is stepping out of that comfort zone, out of that survival behavior.
Yes.
I go back to, you know, my granddaughter telling me, you know, when I was with her in Costa Rica, you know, she wanted to go on the zip lines, and there's 12 trees, which I'm terrified of heights, and they're like, mm-hmm. coming to me up there. I'm like, Anna, this is just way out of my comfort zone. And Anna just looks at me with a little 10-year-old wisdom and says, Ma, I just know you'd be so much more comfortable outside of your comfort zone. and so I thought, well, she can say that. That's what I tell people every day. I'll get in the tree. So I get in the tree. The first tree was terrifying. Mm. I mean, it was so scary. But by the 12th tree, I was having a good time. And that's what we see in recovery, in healing.
Yeah.
It's terrifying, that first tree.
That's just right.
That first time of opening up, the first risk you take, the first time you get honest about, you know, I'm struggling with this, or I did that, and I didn't tell you about it, or whatever. It's really, really scary. But then, if you keep walking, it's so much freer. It's so much better way of living.
That's right. Yeah. Yes. I think part of the idea here is that you can only grow so much when you're comfortable, you know?
Yeah.
Like, part of the hidden blessing of conflict is growth, you know?
Yes, like, absolutely.
Is that you're forced outside that comfort zone, but that's where you're probably going to grow the most.
Mm-hmm.
But again, if we stay in that comfortable space, the upside is you're comfortable, you know, like the downside is like, you're probably not going to grow much and you're probably not going to heal from what you've been dealing with for who knows how long. So yeah, I think the challenge of getting outside that comfort, like being willing to like, okay, I'm going to go up on that zip line or I'm going to go on that high dive, whatever that is, it does. For some people, walking into a counseling office for the first time or being honest.
Walking into a recovery group.
Oof,
coming to a Making Peace and Beyond weekend.
Yes.
I mean, look around on Friday night and everybody's thinking, why the heck did I agree to come here? How can I get out? And then by Sunday, they don't want to go home.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. I experienced that when I went to Making Peace years ago, and it was just this sense of like, I don't know these people in this room. Like, there's just like a kind of like a little bit of a dread, you know, like I hadn't known you very long at that point. So it was just like, okay, I'm walking into this environment and everyone's kind of looking at each other and like, am I just supposed to open up and share? But the way I think, again, the way that you facilitated it, how just intentional and well run that time is, how safe you feel. It just, one person opens up, and then like that level of transparency begets more transparency, because if they were brave enough to share their stuff, like, okay, maybe I don't need to be as guarded about my stuff. And that's where you see like breakthrough happen in a group, you know, like healing happen in community, right?
Well, Jesus says he'll be present when two or more present in his name. And so when you're present in truth and in grace, which is basically the characteristics of Jesus, then something happens that is beyond what any one of us could do without it.
That's right.
You know, community is so hugely important. And one of the things that I think God assigned me to do is just to throw myself under the bus repeatedly, because I am pretty open about things. I walked in secrecy and hiddenness and basically a double life for 35 years and really experienced the freedom that Jesus died to give us. And I feel sad that we don't do that as a church, because we are free of guilt and shame.
That's right.
And as a church, we should embrace that and live in it.
Yeah. Absolutely. It's we should be the one, you know, community on planet Earth
we're comfortable with that, but it's like the opposite for some reason.
I know.
Where we put on our Sunday best, where we you feel like you have to put forth the best part of you. And I know, and I've been talking to people who are like in ministry, right? Like, so we got the professional Christians.
Oh my goodness.
The pressure is dialed up twice as hard. So it's instead of being this place that's like this bastion of vulnerability and honesty and like, hey, I'm a sinner, you're a sinner, like, yeah, let's walk this walk together. It's like, okay, like, I can't have him see me, I can't have her see me, if they only knew. And so we quote scripture, we wear our suits and ties.
We look pretty, we smile sweetly.
That's right.
Hey, how are you?
That's right, yeah. And then meanwhile, like internally we're falling apart, or our family lives are falling apart. And then some kind of big catastrophe breaks out morally in the church or whatever that is, right? Like, all because like there's just not this place of transparency. And I don't know if there's anything, you know, from, you know, in the teaching of the church. I think it's just more so the culture of it. And I don't mean like our church, I just mean like the church at large. Like, I think there's just something in the culture where it's like, we just naturally put our best feet forward.
Women in my group used to say, I have to put on my face to go out. I think that's a cultural thing. I think it's everywhere.
Yeah.
I mean, the church should be a place that doesn't buy into that. But
yeah. But
I think there is a tendency, again, to want to present well for fear of being vulnerable. Mm-hmm. And we're in an image management society,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And that is so there. And to give up that image,
yeah,
and just to be a regular person. Somebody said, we're not bank robbers pretending to be Christians. We're Christians who sometimes rob banks.
Right.
I mean, we it's not an either or. Yeah. We're people who know we need a Savior,
yeah,
and have one, which is great.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I think there is a tendency. Our testimony is our story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, my story is pretty crazy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, here I was doing these things. I was lost. And then Jesus came along, and now I'm found, and I'm still struggling in areas.
Yeah.
You know, and always will be. I'm pretty old now, so the struggle's about over. But I think our testimony is, this is who I was, this is what Jesus did, and this is who I am now.
Yeah.
And just that is singing the praises that we are assigned to sing, you know, and he can do that for you too.
That's
because
right.
He can do it for all of us. That's why he got here.
That's right.
You know, and but
that's
I think right. that the fear of being known is so strong.
That's right.
And avoidance is so strong.
Yeah.
And often it comes out of an early childhood where your dependency needs weren't met and you did the best you could to survive,
yeah. And
you tried to figure it out and you thought, there's nobody out there for me, I have to do it myself, I have to figure out how to run this show, I have to worry about what's going to happen in the future because I've got to manage whatever that is, and I'm going to be alone. And so to really allow someone into that,
yeah. If
what has been there prior, it's like we took this little kid, this perfectly innocent little kid, and lock him in the closet and put this big guard out there that says, nobody's going to hurt me again.
That's right.
Somebody told me one time, well, nobody may ever hurt you again, but you'll never love.
That's right. Yeah.
It's a little kid that can love.
Yeah. Yeah.
That big person you made up can't love.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, it's not even the genuine you. He or she is not the genuine you.
And God doesn't love that person.
That's right.
He didn't make that person.
He didn't create that person.
That's your creation, not his.
That's right, yeah. Yeah, so you're not going to get healing in that projection because it's not genuinely you, you know? Like, the real you has to please come forward in order to get that healing. Because otherwise...
And relational life.
Yeah.
I think the neatest thing about being a counselor is people who really do it, who both of them show up.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whether it's a parent and a child, whether it's a spouse, whether it's friends, but when both of them show up,
yeah. And
both of them own their own stuff and do their own work.
Yeah.
I mean, there are couples that come in sometimes, and I'm like, God, this couple is so messed up, I don't even think you can heal. And next thing I know, they're tootling off into the sunset.
That's right.
Because
yeah. They
got honest with each other.
Yeah.
And they are the strongest couples ever.
Yep.
I mean, you can't break those couples apart because love is the toughest thing in the world.
That's
it created us.
That's right.
And you uncover it and you let it be there by having truth in the relationship,
yeah,
it's like there's such strength in that.
It really is.
It is.
Yeah, there really is. And it is awesome to see, like, changing for the better, growing. Sometimes the process is kind of ugly, but, like, but the outcome is it's all intense. Yeah. But the outcome is incredible, you know? And so we're seeing God work every day.
We got a front row seat.
That's right. Yeah.
I tell people sometimes it would be, I've been doing this for 45 years. It would be truly masochistic to sit here if nobody ever changed.
Yeah.
You know, that would be the worst possible assignment.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It's like the Greek tragedy of the guy pushing the boulder up the hill every day, all for it to start back over the next day. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And you know, to your point about, like, again, getting honest with yourself, and that's kind of a big theme here. The story of Jacob always comes up for me with this, in that, like, when he's having that wrestling match with God, like, and God essentially asks him what his name is, he has to say out loud, "My name is Jacob," and the name Jacob. I don't know the exact translation, but I think it's like swindler or heel grabber. It's something that's not good. And he has to own up to his identity of who he is and who he has been.
Yeah.
But that's the moment he really meets God, and he is set on a completely different course after that. And I just think that speaks to so many of our situations where it's like, I have to look myself in the mirror and say, like, okay, I'm Mark, right? Like, I'm Jamie. The good and the bad and the ugly, you know?
I need to look seriously at my assets and liabilities, the things that I've done, the things that have hurt people, mm-hmm. the times that I've been dishonest or I've embellished or minimized truths. I have to look at the sin that I've committed through the years, you know, and just the things that I have done that have self-sabotaged love.
Yeah.
You know, the ways I've treated people unkindly.
Yeah.
And, you know, the ways I'm talking to somebody I profess to love. Mm. I mean, it's like you profess to love this person that you're saying these things to. I can't even understand how you could think that was love. You know?
Yeah. 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 So it's, yeah, that on, I think you're dead on. I think that the honesty piece and owning up to and confronting that stuff in ourselves, it's one of, if not honestly, the biggest barrier to healing that I've seen. And it's easy again to put it on other things. It's other people. It's the system. It's my family.
It's that.
Right. And it's not to say, like, trauma doesn't exist. It absolutely does. But, like,
for everybody.
Yeah.
I mean, we think trauma is an excuse to treat people inappropriately, to not do the things that we're responsible for doing.
Right.
And anyway, there's, I mean, you can live there, but you'll never change.
That's right. That's right. And we see that not just with individuals, but generations, right?
Like, with societies.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, we are victimizing society.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
We tend to cater to it.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of times, if people have been wounded early in their life, they're looking for somebody to meet their dependency needs. Mm. They're looking for somebody to care for them, looking for somebody to tell them what to do, looking for somebody. Mm. And that doesn't happen when you're an adult. I mean, you don't want somebody changing your diapers when you're 25. I mean, it's like your dependency needs are over. It starts as parent to child dependency. Adult love is interdependent. It's mutual. It's a partnership. It's not somebody's going to take care of you as if you were a child.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. 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 So, yeah, coming out of that, on the one hand, it's like, yeah, that sort of like that childish part or that younger part of us is wounded and does need to be loved and cared for and accepted and all those things. But on the other hand, like, we are adults, right? Like, and we bear responsibility with that. And it's like, again, just because I stubbed my toe doesn't give me carte blanche to, like, just, like, start throwing things at people, you know?
Exactly.
So it doesn't minimize the pain, but we have to deal with this. We have to take ownership of the behavior. We have to deal with it. And then, you know, again, will the real you, will the real me, please come forward so that I can actually heal.
And the leg.
That's right.
And today.
And the leg. Yeah.
So, I don't know, change is hard, and it does take a lifetime. I mean, we move out of the language of survival pay attention to the word survival. I mean, whatever you did to get here, whatever you've been through, whatever, however you've survived what you did to get here.
Yeah.
If it's not working for you today, you can change it.
That's right. That's right.
And learning to live in the language of love, because if you're living in the language of survival, the control, fight, run, freeze, you cannot have a healthy relationship. You cannot.
That's right. That's right.
And so it's important work.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
it's also very scary. God offers us the language of love, forgiveness, acceptance, mercy, compassion. You know.
Yeah.
And the things that really make life worth living.
Yeah.
Yeah. In which, at the end of the day, you have to put down those old survival tools in order to walk in. You know, it's a trade-off, you know. They serve their purpose maybe at one point. But like a Band-Aid that's been on way too long, it starts to contribute to the problem rather than relieve the problem.
Good
and
analogy.
So, yeah. Yeah. I got a little kid, so Band-Aids everywhere all the time. So, so yeah, eventually you have to choose, do I want to walk in that healing? Do I want to be closer to people and enjoy those relationships? Or am I going to hang on to these old survival tools? And it's got to be one or the other.
We talk about people walking into a group meeting for the first time. You sit in the back of the room and you sit there and you analyze everybody and figure out why they aren't like you. You know, go a few times, you know, introduce yourself to people, contribute, listen to something, and you'll probably find that you're more like other people than you thought you were.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah.
Not that much. There's only so many things that a human being can do wrong. Anyway, I love having you here. I loved doing this.
Oh, me too. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for joining us today. If you enjoyed this conversation, please like and subscribe, leave a review, tell your friends, and join us on all of our social media channels. Thanks again, and God bless you.